All right, good morning, everybody. It is Thursday, March 10th, 11:10 a.m. We're here for Chem 12A, and welcome to everybody who's joining us. Jonathan just jumped in too. So somehow I can't see all the screens that I want to see. Check and make sure I've got things. All right, so where we left off. We left off last time. We were talking about six-member ring conformations and looking at the reason that an equatorial group is lower energy conformation than a group in the axial orientation. And that's where I want to pick it up. I want to pick it up with these six-membered rings. And then the plan for today is we're going to go through six-membered rings a little bit more. We're going to look at a few more details with those six-membered ring systems, show you how to tackle systems that have more than one substituent in them. And then we start getting into stereoisomerism. Within chapter four, the latter half of chapter four is stereoisomerism. And so we'll look at that both in terms of cis-trans, in terms of double bonds. We'll look at it in cis-trans in terms of ring systems. And then we'll look at it in terms of RNS, in terms of optical isomers as well, rather than just geometric isomers. So all of that is where we're going. So let me go ahead and do a screen share. Get the iPad up and running. That should do it. Come on, little iPad. All right, and we'll start a new lecture here. So, like I said, where we left off on ring systems, and we were looking at six-membered ring systems. And what we showed is that when we take a look at these six-membered ring systems, that we can have a substituent that is in the axial orientation versus a substituent which is in the equatorial position. And we said that this was the major conformation. We gave two reasons for that. The two reasons were the decrease of 1,3 diaxial interactions. So we said that when we had a substituent that was in the axial orientation, that it has what are called 1,3 diaxials. And that this group, the X and the hydrogens, are close to each other. And because they're close to each other, this presents what are called 1,3 diaxial interactions. And I'll call them steric interactions. And these raise the energy of the system. So going to an equatorial relieves those 1,3 diaxials. So when I take and I draw this substituent in an equatorial orientation, now there's no 1,3 diaxials. The other thing that we said, so that was reason number one. The other thing that we said here, reason number two, had to do with gauche versus anti. And so in number two, we had a way of drawing Newman projections for six-membered ring conformations. Now I'm gonna, makes me crazy when I can't make my ring system look the way that I want. So So that's going to help me out. I'm going to draw first a system where I have a six-membered ring and I have a substituent in the axial orientation. And for each of these, I made a mistake here, I apologize, let me fix that. For each of these positions, I'm going to leave these as hydrogens. I have one more mistake I got to fix. Okay, so this is in an axial orientation. And what that axial group does is that this part of the ring system, these two are bumping into each other and constitute a gauche interaction. And then when that goes through the ring flip, the pseudo rotation, then the front group comes down, the back group goes up. I draw the rest of the ring system. And now X resides over here. These are all hydrogens. The difference now is that X is now in an equatorial orientation. And in that equatorial orientation, the corresponding group that I was tracking before is over here. So what happened is that group that was in red is the same carbon that came down over here when it went through the pseudo rotation. These two groups are now anti to one another and have lower energy. So we have two effects. We have the decrease of the 1-3 diaxial interactions. That's one effect. And the second effect is that when I put a substituent in the equatorial orientation, that it turns out to be anti to the ring carbons and therefore is lower energy. So those are the two reasons that I've got in terms of why an equatorial group is lower in energy. And I might want to add here too, it's kind of nice to add that there are hydrogens that are here on this part of the system, but the distance between these guys is larger. So when I look at the distance between those, that hydrogen and that halogen, it looks like it's really close. It looks like it may even be closer than in the 1-3 diaxials. But this distance is actually quite large. So I'll say that that distance there is larger than a 1-3 diaxial distance. And that's why it's lower energy. Okay. So those are my reasons that I had that we showed the last time when we went through all of that. I just wanted to reiterate that and make that really, really clear. And now we can start to ask, what about conformations of molecules that may have different types of substituents? Well, one of the things that we need to know is we need to know what happens when we look at different substituents. Let's take and let's put an R group here and let's look at how this thing reacts with different size R groups. So with different size R groups, as I look at axial versus equatorial, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to list the R group and then the percentage and the percent in the equatorial at room temperature. So what we find is that when we do this with a methyl, a CH3 group, that I get about 95% in the equatorial orientation, 5% in the axial. If I change that to something smaller, like a fluoride, then I get about 60%. And if I change it to something really, really big, something like a tertiary butyl, so a tertiary butyl group, in order to describe that, it's best if I carry this bond out and carry this out and make that sort of like the main chain. So this is a T butyl group. Then in a T butyl group, this is about 99.99%. That group is so bulky as to be just super massive. And it would help if I had some other groups in here as well. So let me put a few more groups in just to kind of show you. And we could arrange them sterically. We could look at an isopropyl. Isopropyl is about 97%. And I've got numbers for chlorides. I've got numbers for hydroxyl. I've got numbers for an ethyl. What else do I have? Isopropyl, tertiary butyl, and methyl. I think those are all the numbers that I've got. So chloral, the chlorine group, chlorine substituent is about 70%. The hydroxyl group is 83%. And the ethyl group is 96%. So what this chart does is it tells us the relative size of the group. The larger the group, the higher the percentage in terms of equatorial. And we have a name for this. We call it an A value. We don't use the percentage as the A value. We calculate a value called an A value that tells us the relative proportion of material that is in the equatorial orientation and gives us sort of a steric value of what a substituent is. I don't worry about the A values as much. We don't go through them. I don't really teach them, but just to say that there is something that relates steric bulk and a value that we use called the A value that we can tell the relative size of each one of these groups. And so I could go through this and I could say the most bulky group on here is the tertiary butyl group. The smallest group on here is the fluoride. And then I can go from fluoride to chloride. Chloride increases just 10%, so it goes from 60 to 70. Hydroxyl is a little bit bigger than a chloride, but if I were to compare hydroxyl and methyl, I could look at that and I could say, look, hydroxyl is slightly smaller than methyl, that methyl is 95%. And we could see that in that an oxygen is slightly smaller than carbon, so that's one part, but the other part is also the tetrahedral nature of a methyl group versus a hydroxyl group. And so when I'm looking at size and I'm thinking about these different groups, I can think about the fact that a methyl group is tetrahedral in nature, and that this group has rotation about its sigma bond and acts like a little propeller. And when I look at an oxygen with a hydrogen on it, it can do the same thing, and it has lone pairs, but the relative size is that a hydroxyl is smaller than a methyl. And we can look at those percentages, and we could just pull those percentages, 83% in equatorial versus over here, we're at 90%, 95% in equatorial. And so that gives us sort of like the relative size of things to be able to compare. Now that's going to allow us then to be able to look at different substituents in different positions. And we can now take a ring system and we can put some different substituents on it. And then we can ask, well, what is the major conformation of that ring system? Remember, this is an important skill set to be able to do as we start to get into chemical reactions. And I said that many chemical reactions go through six-member ring transition states. Also, conformations of rings sometimes determine whether or not a reaction can go forward or not, depending upon what the major conformation of the ring is. So these are important questions that are going to come up later, even if we don't see the value in knowing, well, why do I want to know which is the major conformation in these? Because it's going to be important later on as we get to it. So let's take a molecule and let's put two substituents on it. And what we can do is we can put a methyl group in that position, and I'm using a stereochemical designation to distinguish a particular isomer that I want to look at. And let's also put another substituent here. And we were just dealing with methyl and hydroxyl. And so now we can ask, what is the lowest energy conformation . And the process is to take it from, sorry, iPad decided to sleep there. Okay, so the process is to take from the two-dimensional, and we're gonna go from the 2D to a 3D. And then from 3D, we will draw both conformations and analyze. So when we start to do that, what I always do is I take and draw the ring system out as if it were flat. Now, when I'm thinking flat, what I'm thinking is like this, so that this part is coming out towards me and the rest of the molecule is going back away from me. And I need to choose one of these two points and place it on this ring system wherever I want to place. And I also have to place it either up or down in specific orientations, and I want to make sure that it's consistent. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go through and I'm going to choose this carbon here to be number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. I don't want to make any mistakes. I'm numbering around in a clockwise orientation. Pick one of the carbons on your flat ring system and make it number 1. I always like to make number 1 right here, just easier. And make sure that you number around in a clockwise orientation. Keep the orientation the same. Then what we do is we draw straight up and straight down for the substituents that are on 1 and 2. Up on number 1 is a methyl. Up on number 2 is a hydroxyl. Presumably at the bottom are hydrogens because they're not shown. Once I've done that, now I'm going to take carbon 1 and I'm going to pull it down, and carbon number 1, pull it up, carbon number 4, pull it down. It could be the other way. It's totally arbitrary. You can go whichever direction you want. And from there, I start to draw the 3D chair conformations. And now I have to take a look at the relative upness and downness, and I have to make sure that my carbons are numbered appropriately. Number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Again, I'm numbering clockwise. My substituents on carbon number 1 and on number 2. That's why I've chosen 1 and 2, is because they're a little bit easier to draw. And the relative up and down stays the same. Up, down, up, down. So that means up on carbon 1 is a methyl, down is a hydrogen. Up on carbon 2 is a hydroxyl, down on carbon 2 is a hydrogen, and then I draw the ring flip, the pseudo rotation. Again, going through and numbering to make sure you don't make any mistakes. Always numbering in the same direction so you don't make any mistakes. Put the positions in on the ring system where they go, and then keep the same relative orientation. Up, down, up, down. Now I have the conformations that I would like to analyze. And I can analyze them in the two different ways. I can analyze them in terms of their 1-3 diaxials, and I can analyze them in terms of their Newman projections. Just, I need to decide which direction I want to look at them at, all right? And so let's do number 1 first. Let's look at the 1-3 diaxial interactions. What we can see is that when we look at this first conformation, where I have the methyl group up, and sometimes it's easier to leave the hydrogens off to make the analysis a little bit easier. Here what I have is the methyl group, and this is the large group. This group is axial. And I have 1-3 diaxial interactions strong 1-3 diaxials with large group the methyl. And what I have is I have the smaller group, this guy is in the equatorial. All right, and then when I go through and do the pseudo rotation, then I get the methyl group equatorial and the hydroxyl axial. Now what I've got is I have the smaller group in the axial orientation, and I have the 1-3 diaxials that are there, and the large group is in the equatorial orientation. So here, lower 1-3 diaxials, and a larger group in equatorial. Okay, but what if I wanted to take it and I wanted to look at it in terms of the Newman projection? How do I determine, or how do I decide what bond I want to look down in able to look at a Newman? So let's take and redraw them one more time, and we'll convert them into a Newman after we draw them. I'm going to choose a bond to look down. I've got the hydroxyl group and the CH3. And the CH3 group and the hydroxyl group. And the bond that I'm going to choose to look down is going to be this one and the parallel one, that guy. And I want to look down the same bonds over here, that one and that one. So those are my same bonds. How do I know those are my same bonds? Because the numbering, watch, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. I'm looking down the 1, 2, and the 4, 5. I'm looking down the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'm looking down the 1, 2, and the 4, 5. So directional, I'm going to choose to look this way and that way. And for this one, I'm going to look that way and that way. Always starting from the 2, starting from the 4, starting from the 2, starting from the 4. Okay, so now I go ahead and draw that Newman for each one of these. And I'm going to move these up just a little bit so I've got enough room here to fit them in, maybe moving them over a little sideways. All right, so on the first one, notice where number 3 is. It comes up. Number 3 is in the front, and number 3 comes up. So number 3 in the front, coming up, that's the CH2 group. That is carbon number 3. And number 6 in the back is going down. In the back, so I draw it just to the outsides of the ring system in order to make that back. That's going down. That's number 6. And then what I do is I take and just put the rest of the positions in, because they're easy enough to draw in at this point, and then fill them in. So what I'm looking at is up is CH3, and that's on the back carbon. CH3 up, back carbon. Hydroxyl group, front carbon, up, front carbon. Everything else is a hydrogen. All right, on the next one, it's going to be the reverse. So I start with number 3 down, front carbon, and back, number 6, and number 6 is up. Once I establish that, then I can draw in the rest of the bonds, and then I'll see who goes where. Okay, so front carbon, up, front carbon, up, hydroxyl. Back carbon, number 1, this is up, up, CH3. If it helps, go ahead and put the hydrogens in so you can see relative up and down. Sometimes I forget that actually seeing that other atom can make it a little bit easier. Now I've got the two Newmans. Now I can start to assess things. Go ahead first and pick your large groups and color code your small groups. If we have 3, then we might have a small, a large, and a medium. Then track what's going on with that large group and what its relative interactions are. All right, so what I see is I get a Gauss interaction here and a Gauss interaction here. And this Gauss interaction is the one that I'm worried about, because this is the large group combined with the ring system. So I'm actually going to color this one. Made a mess of it. All right, I'm going to color this one in red. And I'm going to highlight that this CH2 group right here, which there's nothing I can do about, is where the interaction is. Yes, the methyl group is gauged to the hydroxyl, but know what? The methyl group is gauged to the hydroxyl over here as well. So I have this same Gauss interaction right here between the two groups. But what's different is what's going on here, that as this large group is in the equatorial orientation, it is now anti to carbon number three. And yes, the smaller group is now Gauss, but the answer to that is it's the smaller group. And so now these two are anti. And that's one of the key things, is the fact that we got the large group anti to the CH2. This one, the large group is Gauss to the ring. And so that's helping me to see where there are lower interactions. So that's an important component there in being able to do that with two groups. And we did it with two groups, and those two groups are right next to each other, but they don't have to be. They can be separated by any number of carbons, and each ring system is a little bit different in terms of what the substituents are. And sometimes there are more than two substituents. Sometimes there can be three substituents. And it really depends then on what happens. So if we want to look at three substituents, sometimes the analysis just gets a little bit more complex. That's all. We can shortcut that analysis a little bit, but we don't want to overdo it in terms of shortcutting it. So let's make this a methyl. Let's make this a methyl. And I'm not envisioning, I don't know exactly what's going to happen with this one. This is not one that I have worked out. Actually, most of them I don't have worked out. I make them up, but let me think about what's going to happen with this. I think this is going to be okay. Let's put the hydroxyl group there. And let's go through and do the conformation. So again, what we do is we start off flat. Once we start off flat, we pick positions to be the relative positions that I'm interested in. So this is going to be number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. This is definitely arbitrary in terms of how I'm numbering and how and where I place them when I place them on the flat system. I have some experience that tells me that it's easiest if I put one of them always at carbon number one. If I always take a substituent and put carbon number one to the right, that just makes things a whole lot easier. And so I tend to do that way. CH3 is up, OH is up, and methyl is down. And then that means that these are hydrogens that are in the other positions. And then same thing. Go ahead and make your chair conformations. One thing that I'll say is that when you make your chair conformations, it's important to remember the relative orientations of the positions and how to draw them. So it's nice to have a drawing on hand and shows you axial, 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 axial. There are 6 axial orientations, and there are 6 equatorial positions. So there's all of those positions relative to one another. So I'm going to leave that up there. And now what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to try to use that to orient my substituents over here once I go to draw them. Okay, so I have a methyl, which is up. I have the hydroxyl, which is up. And now I really want to make sure I hit the right carbons. This is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And notice that my other carbon is on 5, right? So my other carbon here is sitting on 5. That's 5. This is the downwards part of 5. And so what I've got is I've got a position that is out here on 5. And that's where my position sits. When I do the pseudo rotation, now what I've got to do is get each one of those in the right place. This is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Number 1, the CH3 goes equatorial. Number 2, the hydroxyl group goes axial. Number 5, the methyl group goes axial. So all the same things apply now. What I can do is I can take a look at what are my large groups and what are my medium groups. That could be helpful. The other thing that can be helpful is to look at this. What do I have going on? How many of the groups are axial versus equatorial? So I've got axial methyl, one group, and I've got equatorial, two groups. I've got the methyl and the hydroxyl. So this one group here is experiencing the diaxials. When I look at the other conformation, I could do the same thing, and I can ask axial and equatorial. Axial, now I've got two groups. I've got the methyl and the hydroxyl. And in the equatorial, I've only got one, methyl. So what's going on in this one is that this one, I'm going to extend this bond up. I don't like the way that's drawn. So I'm going to extend it. And I missed. I'm trying not to draw through my OH. That's where my problem was coming in. So there's the other hydrogen. So there are the 1,3 diaxial interactions that are happening there with that axial group. And then I've got very similar 1,3 diaxial interactions happening down here . Here's the other one. And so this one has higher 1,3 diaxials. That means that the other one is going to be lower energy. And so when I want the lower energy conformation, that's it. That's another way to go through and do it. Now I could go through and I could draw the Newman projections for it. I'm going to find that I'm going to have lower lower energy anti-confirmations for this one when I count them overall. Sometimes that's a little bit hard to do. I would have to find a bond to be able to look down, and I would have to decide which of the bonds I want to look down. The more substituents you get, the harder it is, the more things you have to compare. As it is, luckily, we would have been able to do this one. We would have been able to look down 1, 2 and 1, 5, and that would have put substituents on 1 and 2 and 5. Those would have been the circles for the Newman. But with this one, I don't really have to do that because the diaxials were so clear in making clear what was the lowest energy conformation. Okay, so we've spent a good amount of time on that, actually more than what I had really anticipated. And I've given you some really good examples of how to go through and solve those types of problems and the skill sets and the numbering, and I've given it all to you. And this is about as complicated as it gets with 3 substituents. I don't really throw like 5 substituents or anything insane at you. It really is 3 is the largest number I generally show. All right, so from ring systems then, we put ring systems on hold and we start to look at stereochemistry. And with stereochemistry, we start off looking at a set of isomers that we typically call geometric isomers, but we have different names for them. Geometric is really a subclass of isomers. It's not a term, it's more like a slang term almost when we talk about geometric isomers, because there isn't any definitive thing called a geometric isomer. We have, within stereochemistry, we have enantiomers and we have diastereomers. And those are the only 2 types of stereochemistry that we have. And so these all fit into the diastereomer category. But when we look at these, ring systems give us this ability to have a certain type of isomerism. For instance, when we look at a simple ring system like a cyclopropane, I can have 2 substituents that are on this system. I can have them be in the upwards orientation. And maybe what I should do before I do that is do this. Let's take a cyclopropane and let's put 2 methyl groups on it. And the translation of this is that if I want to draw this in 3 dimensions, I can think about it as having 2 groups that are both up and they are on the same side of the ring system. This same side, we give a name and we call it cis. When I look at 2 groups and I put 1 group going backwards and 1 group coming forwards, now I can take and I can draw this and I have 1 group which is going down and another group which is coming up. These are on opposite sides. This is what we call trans. So cis and trans. We can do the same thing with other types of ring systems. So I can take a look at a 6-membered ring system and 2 substituents that are on a 6-membered ring system. I can have those 2 on the same side. This would be a system that when drawn flat would give you the 2 methyl groups on the same side of the ring system. This is going to be a cis conformation of those 2 methyl groups. If I take and I put the 2 methyl groups, one on one side going up, one on the other side going down, this is going to be equivalent to when I draw it flat, one group going up, one group going down. This is going to be the trans. So I have cis and trans isomerisms, and they can be separated by any number of carbons. They don't have to be right next to each other. But one of the interesting things is, watch when I draw this in three dimensions. When I take it and convert it into a chair conformation, what I find is that one group is axial and the other group equatorial. The trans, when I draw the trans in six-member ring conformation, one group is axial and the other group is axial. And so it's harder in the six-membered ring conformation, when it's in a chair conformation, to be able to tell what is cis and what is trans. And what is cis and what is trans, if they're separated by two or three or more carbons, gets even more complicated. And so it's always best to look at them in terms of their flat configurations to see what is going on there in terms of the ring systems and how to understand the ring systems, right? This also translates into, I was gonna do something else here. Oh, I need to do one more thing. Another nomenclature thing. This also translates into double bonds. With double bonds, and I'll do the double bonds here real quick too. When we look at a double bond, we can have two substituents on the double bond being on the same side of the double bond. This is a cis double bond. We can have two substituents on the double bond being on opposite sides. And this is a trans double bond. And so cis and trans, cis means same, trans means opposite in terms of the way that that works. Now, these are for very simple double bonds. As double bonds get more complicated, we tend to use a different type of distinguishing name in order to name each one of the double bonds. I'm going to hold on that for a minute because I'm remembering that while we started to talk about rings, what we didn't talk about is what happens if I have more than one ring? What happens if I have two rings joined together? So let's cover that real quick, because it's just it's not very long. It's just an important part that we need to cover real quick. So let's talk about multiple rings. There's two different types of systems that have multiple rings. The rings can be joined, multiple rings, joined rings. So the rings can be joined in multiple ways. We can have what are called spirocompounds. Spirocompounds are best drawn in three dimensions to understand why they are spiro. If I take a look at any couple of spirocompounds, the reason that they're called spiro is because of the tetrahedral nature of the carbon and what happens when they join together at this tetrahedral center right here. What we find is that that carbon, when we draw it, what we get is we get a group that goes front and back. There's the first part, and then in plane. And so one of these is coming forwards towards you. The other is going back away from you. And then this one is in the plane. So this one here appears to be flat, while as this one is up and down, which means that they have a rotation to them. And thus the spiral or spiro is where that name comes from. We can do the same thing with the five-membered ring system, where we can put one group coming forward, one group going back, and then that makes the next ring system. The way that these ring systems get named is we name them with the number of carbons that go around each side of the ring system. So for instance, if I wanted to name this system here, what I do is I take a look at the number of carbons that go around the system on one side and the number of carbons that go around the system on the other side. I then take a look at how many carbons total there are. There are 5 carbons total. With 5 carbons total, that system is named after a pentane. I use the word spiro in front. And then what I do is I use a square bracket and I put in the two numbers, 2, 2. I close that up and then I put pentane. If the two numbers are different, for instance, if I'm looking at the compound that is on the right-hand side, then what I do is I take the numbers. That one is going to have 4. The other one is going to have 2. And I do them in increasing order. So I would list the 2 and then the 4. So this compound is going to be named spiro. I list the 2 first, a smaller number, and then increasing to the larger number, 4. Close it up. And this has 5, 6, 7. This is a septane. So there's how we would go through and name those. So they go in increasing order. The other type of system that we have is called a bicyclo system. So rather than spiro, we have bicyclo. Bicyclo systems are systems that have that don't join at one carbon, they join at 2 or more carbons. And so with the bicyclic compounds, what we see is that these types of compounds join, let's do a 5-membered ring there, join at 2 axes like this, or they can join at more. So it's possible to be able to have things that look like this. These are examples of bicyclo systems. And in the bicyclic systems, I'm going to actually rotate these two and move them over. The way that we name them is different than the spiros. So here what we do is we use bicyclo instead of spiro. So this one is going to be bicyclo. And then I put the parentheses, and now I'm going to count the number of atoms around each one of the positions, around each one of the rings. So basically what I'm looking at is how many atoms it is in between on that one, on the green, on the red, and on the blue. So there's 3 paths that I can take around a bicyclo system. And in this one, what I do is I decrease. So this one's a little funky. Instead of increasing, they decided to do it in reverse. So this decreasing is going to be 3, 2, 1. So this is a 3, 2, 1. Close it up, count the total number of carbons. So this is going to be 6 for this system here. There's 6, 7, 8. This is an octane. Numbers go in decreasing order. The other molecule is done very similarly. I name it bicyclo. I give it the parentheses, and then I look to see how many atoms it is around in each direction. So we'll go around this way. And I've got 1, 2, 3, 4. We'll go around the other direction. I've got 1, 2, and 3. And so I want to go in decreasing order, 4 before 3. So I'm going to list 4, 3. And then bicyclos always have 3 numbers. The other question is, how many atoms is it across this way? And the answer is 0. And that tells me that there's 0 atoms across the bridgehead. And so this one is 4, 3, 0. And then I count the number of carbons in it. This is 6, 7, 8, 9. This is a nonane. So that's how we go through and name each one of those systems. Interesting, when you look at this, we would think this is a larger molecule, but it's actually an octane. It's got one less carbon. This molecule looks smaller, and yet it's got one more carbon. It's a nonane. So sometimes that can be deceptive in terms of the size of these, but that's how we go through and name them. And we don't put substituents on these. I never ask you to name these with substituents. I only ask you to understand and recognize the framework name without any substituents on it, just to make that a little bit easier. It's not a huge focus point, but it is important. It comes up with some of the molecules that we look at and being able to reproduce their frameworks. So being able to look at these numbers and know what these numbers mean and how to interpret those numbers to build the framework. That's what we're really looking forward to be able to do. All right, so we've got the spiro compounds and we've got the bicyclo compounds. And that finishes up that part. Now, I said that with the double bonds, I want to go back to the double bonds a bit as we go back into stereochemistry. We have a whole chapter on alkenes where we come back and we deal with alkenes, but we got to deal with a little bit of stereochemistry with alkenes because this is where we introduce some of the rules that we have for determining stereochemistry. So one of the questions that I might ask is that if I have a molecule that looks something like this, is this cis or trans? And so we look at the molecule and we say, well, we know what cis looks like and we know what trans looks like. So I have cis and I have trans. And the question is it cis or is it trans? And the answer is, well, no, it's not either. Cis and trans does not adequately describe this molecule. So we don't use cis or trans in order to be able to describe this molecule. And yet we have to be able to describe it because there are two possible ways that this molecule could be drawn. And they are two different molecules and they deserve two different names. There is the one that we are looking at here. And then there is this one where the ethyl group is flipped onto the other side. And so these are isomers. And if I'm looking at those isomers, what I'm seeing is that I have a group that is here that is flipped and that these two cannot be superimposed on each other
if I try to take this molecule and superimpose it, I can see that the carbonyls and that isopropyl group are on the same side, but clearly the methyl and the ethyl group has swapped. And so they have to have different names. I have to be able to refer to them differently. And the question is, one of these is cis and one of these is trans, but I tend not to use cis and trans. I tend to use a different type of system that is called EZ nomenclature. The EZ nomenclature stands for E. We put it in parentheses. It's a stereochemical designation. The stereochemical designation E is German for Endgegen. And that stands for opposite. The Z is for Zusammen. And that means together. So they align that opposite, this is trans. And Zusammen, Z, is cis. So opposite, trans, together, cis, Endgegen, and Zusammen. Now, it seems like I've just done the same thing. All I've done is said opposite and together, which side is opposite and which side is together. We have to have a prioritization process where we go through and assign priorities to each one of the substituents. And then we look at the two highest priorities and see whether they are on the same side or whether they are on opposite sides. So those priorities, that prioritization system, is called the Kahn-Ingold-Prelog rules. And so we have to figure out what the Kahn-Ingold-Prelog rules are, which I don't have written down. We will go through them. So Kahn, C-O-H-N, Ingold, Prelog rules. And these rules allow us to assign priorities. So the first rule, number one, the higher the atomic number, the higher the priority. And I'm going to say at first point of difference. That's basically it. I was trying to think, there's a number of different rules here. But that's it. The higher atomic number at first point of difference. And number two, we use dummy atoms. For double bonds and triple bonds. So in other words, if I have a double bond and I'm interested in trying to draw this one more time. If I have a double bond and what I am trying to do is trying to count all four groups, I think of this as being two oxygens, where the second oxygen is the dummy atom. It's just a duplicate. If I have a triple bond and I'm looking at something that has a triple bond to a carbon and a hydrogen, and I'm interested in trying to figure out how do I treat that carbon, the way that I treat that carbon is that it goes to three different carbons, where two of the carbons are dummy atoms. For the purposes of tracking. And then the third thing is that lone pairs have the lowest priority. As a group. So for instance, if I'm looking at a nitrogen, and that nitrogen has three things attached to it, or I should say two things attached to it. Let's say that this is the chain that I'm coming from, and I'm looking at the lone pair, and then I'm looking at the groups, and let's say that this is a methyl group, this is a hydrogen, and that's a lone pair, then carbon has the highest priority. Hydrogen would come after that. Lone pair would come after that. So it would go carbon greater than hydrogen, greater than lone pair in terms of being able to rank lone pairs. So those are the Kahn-Engel-Prelog rules. And then what I can do is I can go through and just assign priorities to the substituents that are on the double bond, and I can then decide what are the two highest priority groups and whether they're on the same side or the opposite sides. So let's take the molecule that I had drawn. I'm going to take a quick peek at it so I remember. And let's use it as an example and apply the Kahn-Engel-Prelog rules. I believe this is the original one that I did. Now, what we do is we split the molecule in half. We first split it this way, perpendicular to the bond. And I'm going to ask which of these two groups is highest priority. So what I do is I start to progress out the chain. And as I progress out the chain, I'm going to go in a series of colors, but I'm going to go out this direction and this direction, and I'm going to look at what I run into first, right? And what I run into first as I go out there is I run into the carbon, and I run into the carbon there. Because they're both carbons, I have to look at what's bonded to each of those carbons in order to distinguish which carbon has higher priority, because the two carbons have the same atomic number. So I can't decide yet. So because of that, what I do is I look at each carbon and I say, all right, one carbon has two other carbons attached to it and a hydrogen. So I'm going to say this guy here is connected to a carbon, and a hydrogen. And this guy is a carbon who is connected to, now this is where I use the dummy atoms because it has to have three things that it's connected to. So it's connected to a carbon and two oxygens. A carbon and two oxygens, one of those oxygens being a dummy atom, but the dummy atom doesn't mean that it has less importance. It's just how I'm using that double bond. And so at first point of difference, as I extend out, first point of difference, it's carbon versus carbon, that guy's a wash. So I don't worry about that one. And then I come over here and I say carbon versus oxygen. Oxygen has the higher atomic number. And so therefore it takes priority. So now what I do is when I look at that molecule has a clear priority side to it on the right-hand side. Notice that it was not about the larger group. That's really important. It's not about total amount of how large is the group. That's not important. What's important is at first point of difference, that's the group that takes priority. Now I need to look at the other side and I need to do the same thing. So now we're going to ask which on this side has priority. So I'm looking at these two. And as I branch out and I come out here, I've got a carbon. And as I branch out here, I've got a carbon. So now I look to see what those two carbons are connected to. This carbon here is a carbon that has three hydrogens on it. This carbon has two hydrogens and a carbon. And so as I compare those, what I'm going to see is that the hydrogens each cancel each other out. And the first point of difference is carbon versus hydrogen, and that gives priority to the higher atomic group. So I would say carbon, hydrogen, hydrogen, hydrogen versus carbon with a carbon, hydrogen, hydrogen. And I can take it right here at first point of difference. Carbon has the higher atomic number. And therefore, this one has priority. Now that I know that that has priority, now I can assign priority to it, and then I can give it an E versus E. So the carbonyl on that side . That's the system that I'm dealing with. You can look at that and you can say that is the same thing as having two groups on opposite sides. That is the opposite one. That means that this is the Entgegen opposite. So this is an E alkene. At this point, we don't use cis and trans because cis and trans really doesn't have the same meaning. Cis and trans is really only for like substituents when there's only two substituents and very easy to handle. Anything that's larger than that or more complicated, we use E and Z. And that's the way we go through and do it. So really, that was a pretty complicated example. They don't get a whole bunch more complicated than that, other than sometimes we throw ring systems at you. And you have to do the same thing within a ring system. We can tell E versus E within a ring system, or when ring systems are included, trying to assign prioritization sometimes gets complicated as you start to go around rings. But I'm wondering, now that we've started to cover isomers, I guess the last thing that I can do, and this is what I'm going to start off with when we come back next time, is that stereochemistry and isomers, So the types of isomers that we have, we really have constitutional. And on the other side, we have stereo. Within the stereo, they break down into two different types. They break down into diastereomers and enantiomers. And diastereomers are not mirror images. And enantiomers are mirror images. And where geometric fits into that, where E and Z fits into that, E and Z sort of fits into that not mirror images. So E and Z fits into this category of diastereomers. Oftentimes what people will do is they'll make another category and they'll say geometric. And you'll see that sometimes people will include another category here that within stereochemistry, they'll say that there's also this geometric. And they'll put EZ over here. But there is no really geometric category. There's really just diastereomers and enantiomers. And E and Z really fits within that idea or concept of diastereomers. Within constitutional, they also break constitutional up into a lot of subcategories. They break them up into chain isomers. They break them up into different types of isomers. And I tend not to do that. They're just all constitutional. And the difference between different isomers is really the same concept, that in order to interconvert from one isomer to another, it requires the breaking and making of a new bond. So you have to physically break a bond and reconnect things in a new orientation in order to make two molecules look the same, then those two molecules were isomers of some type. If you can simply rotate a bond, then they're just different conformations of the same molecule. So I think that's the last thing that I'll do here is I'll say that rotation, let's say if rotation makes two molecules the same, then these were different conformations of the same molecule. If you need to break a bond and reconnect to make two molecules the same, in a new pattern, to make two molecules the same. Then these are isomers. Not necessarily diastereomers or enantiomers, but any type of isomers. So that's the difference between conformations versus different isomers. And as we pick up, we'll go through the stereoisomers and we'll start to look at stereochemistry and what really stereochemistry is, how we define it, how we name molecules and all of that other stuff. And we'll pick that up on Tuesday. All right, I'm gonna cut it there and look for another assignment. I'm gonna try to get another assignment out this afternoon, I think. And I'll put it into the Canvas shell and I'll put out an email. I'll also get this thing uploaded here fairly quickly before office hours. And I wish you guys a good weekend. All right, I'm gonna cut the thing there and I'll take any questions off the air. All right. Thanks, you guys. Take care, everyone.